championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello, welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser, and today I am joined by Jacob Dedamore, otherwise known as Kip's Big Boy from the Barking Carnival. Today we're going to be talking about the LSU game, analyzing what that means for the future, and also going over what the Longhorns are facing in Rice in the next few days. Real quick notes here before we get started, Joe Cook is leaving for a wonderful opportunity to join Brad Kellner at the Horn for their very own podcast that will be more focused towards his own site. I encouraged him to take it. It was a great offer, and it's been a wonderful 2 years with Joe. I am sad to see him go, but I really cannot think of a better guy for this to happen to than Joe Cook. The dude is pure class. So congrats to Joe Cook. Honestly, I hope their podcast takes off. They are two wonderful guys, and it's awesome to be able to call them friends. In the following weeks, I will be joined by Darius Terrell, who was a former football player for the Longhorns. He's been there, done that as a student athlete, so he'll be giving this podcast a wonderful opportunity to get a really in-depth look at what goes on there. So, without further ado, let's get right into it. Rice. So, Jacob, I mean, man, there really isn't much to get going on with Rice, really. It's just, to put it bluntly, it's a game Texas should win outright, and anything less than a 21-point lead will be a disappointment.
Yeah, this is a game that Texas should dominate, really, from start to finish. What I'm going to be most interested in, obviously, if you see them struggle in this game, through any big stretch of it, that's going to be a worry. But what I'm going to be looking for is to see how Texas approaches this game from not so much a game planning standpoint, but I'm curious to see what they focus on and what they do, because Texas should be able to run a pretty relatively vanilla game plan and still control this game and win it handily. What I want to see is, especially on the defensive side, what they work on and kind of how they make some adjustments from last week when it comes to their approach defensively. Offensively, I expect them just to kind of do what they've been doing because it's been working.
Yeah, I mean, specifically on the defensive side, you hope to see them simplified, specifically in the front seven for those guys, because the linebackers last week had a lot of trouble stopping a lot of the passes over the middle, which caused the free safety and the strong safety to have to come over the middle, left the guys on the outside on islands, which is what led to what happened, what we'll talk about later. But simplifying this defense back to what you had back in 2017 is something that seems to be necessary, and I'm looking for that in the Rice game. Kind of go back to the basics of what you know and hammer that home and understand what you're doing, what your assignments are, and hopefully understand the position better than they do. There are certain positions. So that's what I'm looking for there. But in the offense, man, I think you need to get Keontae Ingram back on track after sort of a very demoralizing game for him. And you can see it on the sidelines. He needs a game where he gets 150 yards or something like that. He needs to get back on track because he's going to be your number one guy. And also getting Rashawn Johnson more touches. I think you just need to run the ball over and over and over again. Just simplify it there to get those two guys, which are where you need experience, touches.
Yeah, I mean, defensively, you touched on it. I'm looking for them to get back to some good fundamentals, get back to basics, so to speak. And really, defensively, they need to try to find an identity. I think what we've seen, really, and this goes back to last year, even though they had some more experienced players. You know, right now Texas doesn't seem to have a defensive identity.
Nope.
What do they do? What are the core things that they do well they just haven't been able to figure those out and get to them. We know they're replacing a lot of experience, a lot of starters on the defensive side of the ball. That was anybody who looked at this Texas team coming into the season, that was a concern. It's not the talent. Everyone knows the talent is there. It's the experience on the defensive side of the ball. They also lost some key things in that defense from last season that they really don't have people to replace. For example, they don't have a guy in that defensive front that they can count on to consistently provide pressure on the quarterback, because Charles Omenihu is now playing for the Houston Texans. They really don't have a guy like that right now, at least not that's come forward yet. You were hoping Malcolm Roach might be that guy. He hasn't to this point, at least not consistently. Maybe a Taquan Graham, but none of those guys have stepped up to show that yet. And then, of course, you have the issues in the secondary with the amount of experience that they lost with two senior starters that graduated. So, you know, like I said, I think they really need to find out what they do well and maybe pare things down.
And pound that into oblivion against Rice.
Yeah. The defense on Saturday against LSU, they obviously didn't play well, but I don't think they were put in a position to succeed. I think Todd Orlando needs to kind of reevaluate what he's doing defensively,
right,
based on what we've seen so far. You know, you mentioned the offensive side of the ball. For the most part, the offense has been going and going pretty well. Keontae Ingram had a poor outing against LSU. There's no two ways about it. He just didn't play well. We all know he's not 100% healthy. I get that. But what happened on Saturday wasn't about him not being healthy. He just didn't play good football. And they do need to get him back on track. I would like to see a focus on the run game on Saturday to see if they can kind of get that side of the offense going and get some consistency there. And I'm with you about Roschon Johnson. I think he needs to see a little bit more action, because he came into the game on Saturday and helped provide a spark offensively for Texas.
And it wasn't just the spark. He was able to pass block as good or better than Keontae Ingram was doing. He was one of the most exciting players for Texas in that game. And it was more so you weren't expecting that out of him. And that's why it was so exciting. I want to see some more of that. I mean, what, 2 weeks playing the running back position and he's blocking like that? I mean, the first touchdown the Sam Ellinger threw, it was provided by Roschon Johnson getting a block on Kalavon Chasen in the last second to give Sam Ellinger that last second to fit it into Brennan Eagles. He did a phenomenal job. I want to see more of it.
I agree. I mean, I do think part of it is, number one, we all know that Roschon Johnson is a hell of an athlete, okay? That's never been in doubt. He is a really good athlete. He has the knowledge of the offense to where he knows what guys are supposed to be doing, so it makes it a little bit easier because he was a quarterback. And the third thing he has provided here is he has shown a supreme willingness to do whatever is needed when he gets out there. And so he's using that athlete's body of his, and he's doing the job that a running back is supposed to do. And our most recent episode of Barking Carnival Unplugged, Jason Chilton remarked and said, it's not like you're throwing Jarrod Hurd over there and asking him to suddenly, you know, take carries at tailback and pick up, you know, blitzers. Roschon Johnson is a good-sized athlete, okay? And that's why he can play quarterback, because he's a big kid. He's a big, strong kid. I mean, you know, he may never see the quarterback position again at Texas the way things are going right now. Yeah, I mean, I just like the willingness and the eagerness that he has shown in doing this job, and he's doing it much better than I think anybody expected.
I mean, man, when I rewatched this game, when you got a close-up of him on TV, it looked like he was about to jump out of his shoes. He was so excited to be on the field in whatever capacity. So, yeah, he's brought an incredible spark to that running back position, not just because of how well he's done, but just the excitement and, you know, emotion he brings to it, honestly. Kind of an emotional spark for that offense when he's out in the field. Let's go ahead and look back on that game. And let's take a step back and look at a big picture. Jacob,
after that game, how much does that loss bother you? Looking at it a few days removed.
Just because I'm an alumnus, I've been a fan my whole life. Anytime Texas loses, it bothers me to an extent. That game was very, very winnable for Texas.
Right.
They didn't take advantage of their opportunities enough. LSU did. LSU, for the most part, outplayed them. LSU earned the win. So it's disappointing from the standpoint that they just didn't win the game. But when you look at it from a bigger perspective, big picture sort of thing, it doesn't upset me all that much because of how the game went down, because Texas and LSU were going back and forth through that entire football game, athlete for athlete. Texas matched up with them all across the field. The main difference LSU had was their secondary played better than Texas did. So I looked at it from the standpoint of, yeah, Texas lost, but it's not like they got outclassed by any stretch of the imagination. It's not like you watched that game and said, man, Texas is hanging with them, but I'm not really sure how much they belong on the field. LSU is a very good football team. They're going to win a lot of games. If they can somehow beat Alabama, there's a good chance they go undefeated because they're playing that good of football. They had some defensive issues of their own, by the way, that Texas exposed. It's just a question of whether ACC or SEC teams can take advantage of it. But because of the way the game happened, Texas coming back from 13 points down at the half to, pulling within 2 points a couple of times, not quite able to get over the hump, but showing the fight to come back and make that a game again. And, basically LSU had to hold them off at the end. I'm not that upset about it because it still shows this Texas program is still trending upward.
Right, and I feel like most fans feel the exact same way. In fact, myself, I just got around to rewatching that game. I just pulled myself. I was like, man, I have to watch this game. I had to just stomach it and sit through it and watch it to just see what happened. And I feel like most fans are like you. Hey, it sucks. They lost. And really, it wasn't just that they had better cornerback play or better secondary play because, Duvernay made Grant Delpit and those guys look silly. But it was that LSU took advantage of the opportunities they were given, and Texas did not. And it was just as simple as that. They beat Texas in the red zone. They beat Texas when it comes to schematics on the offensive side, especially on third downs. And they beat Texas by, again, taking advantage of the little things that Texas gave them. Look no further than Texas not being able to convert in fourth downs. It's in the end zone. It was just those two things. You cannot get. That's one of the biggest football sins out there. You're on the 1 yard line. You cannot convert. Like that's gonna hurt you every single time. And the defense gave you a second chance, and you can't do it again. LSU did not waste any of those opportunities. Texas did, and that's why looking back on that game, you're looking at it and saying, man, Texas had so many chances to win. The 3rd and 17, they had so many chances, and they just did not take advantage of their opportunities. That's what hurts. Now, again, you're right, grand scheme of things. What makes this stomachable, the loss, is how it portends for the future. In my opinion, Texas is still 1 year out from being a true contender. The goal this year is to win the Big 12. And next year, it's to take the next step, potentially, to get to the college football playoffs. So when you're still a year out where, LSU is contending to get into the college football playoffs, you're still a year out from that. At this stage in the development of this program, I feel like Longhorn fans should walk away from this game optimistic about the future. And I think they do, but not comfortable. And I think that's pretty much what's happening here. But I also think this is the last year where I think people will let a game like that go. I think this is the last USC 2017. LSU 2019 is the last one of these where, man, we lost a close one to a really good team, but it looks good for the future. No, next, after this, Longhorn fans are going to want wins.
Yeah, and, you know, they've been getting wins starting last year. You know, it's not like those wins aren't happening already. They just didn't happen Saturday night. You know, yes, I do believe, you know, if Texas had somehow managed to win this game, the hype surrounding Texas would have exploded. I think people, when you look at most people who were, you know, looking at that game, I think most people thought Texas would keep it close, but not that many people were picking Texas to win, even at home, against LSU. They just thought LSU was better, more experienced, all that kind of stuff, and a lot of that did come home to roost. But, you know, if you're going to look at it from a is Texas back standpoint, I guess it just depends on what you mean by back.
Well, that's an interesting question. What do you mean by is Texas back here?
Like, if what, you mean is Texas back? Is Texas back in the national conversation? Yes, very much so. That win over Georgia put them back into the national conversation about top teams across the country. But if you mean are they back as a national championship contender, no, not yet. And now winning that game on Saturday might have vaulted them into that discussion. But they're not to that level yet. But they are being talked about nationally, and they're going to continue getting talked as long as their success continues from the success they had last year and it continues forward. You know, if they get some things corrected, they are going to be talked about nationally, and they're going to get a lot of national pub. I mean, you know, you're going to have the OSU game in 2 weeks. You're going to have OU 2 weeks after that. So, you know, if Texas gets back on track, they know they can beat that Oklahoma team that they're going to be facing because they've done it. They almost did it twice last year. They know they can do it. So there's no reason why Texas can't make some corrections and fix some things and get back to, you know, the national prominence. I mean, shoot, they didn't. It's not like they even dropped much in the rankings. They only dropped what, 12 or 13 in the polls after that LSU game.
Two 12 or 13.
Yeah,
not,
that's what I'm
not,
saying.
They not only 12 or 13 places.
No. They dropped 2-12 or 13. They only dropped a few spots because everybody saw how competitive and close that game was. A lot of people saw it because it destroyed ratings on Saturday night. But yeah, Texas is back in the national conversation. There's no question about that. They're just not back as a, you know, national championship threat to get a playoff spot contender just yet.
Yeah, and for me, when I hear Texas is back, I'm thinking, hey, are they going to stay in the national spotlight? Are they going to be a contender to, you know, consistently be up in the top 10? And even if Texas had won that game, I'd be skeptical to say yes. And the only reason being, I think it looks good, you know, a win. Even that loss looks good. But in my eyes, Texas needs to win the games they are supposed to. And then one more to truly be back. That's when I will believe 100%, hey, yeah, Texas is back. They're going to consistently be amongst the top 10. And on some years, shooting for the college football playoffs. That's when I say, yeah, okay, Texas is back. Sam Ellinger called it. We can finally stop using it as a meme. Until that point, you know, yeah, they're back in the national conversation, but is that good with if they lose to, I don't know, Kansas State this year, or they lose to Oklahoma State, they lose to competition that they're supposed to beat? At that point, I don't know if they're actually truly back or they're still going to be a butt of the jokes, and that is Texas back is going to continue to be a joke.
Well, I mean, like I said, a lot of that will depend on how things go this season. You know, if Texas finds themselves back in the Big 12 championship game again this season, then they're still going to be on the trajectory they're on. You want to see them making improvements and beating teams that they should beat and are better than. Oklahoma State's going to be a big test when they come into Austin in about a week and a half. The OU game, they're not going to be favored to beat Oklahoma like they haven't been the last few years. So if they knock them off, it's an upset. You know, all the other games that Texas will play in the Big 12 are games that they will be favored to win. Even the road matchups. The way things are breaking down at this point. So if Texas handles their business, then they should be sitting. You know, with what we've seen so far, if they handle their business, you know, they should be sitting with no worse than a 9-3 record like they had last year. Now you want to see them make improvements. So let's get to 10-2 at the very least, meaning if your only loss the rest of the way is to Oklahoma and you're back in the Big 12 championship game with a 10-win season already in your pocket, you've made improvements. And this time, see if you can go win that Big 12 championship. You know, I'm really surprised. You know, I thought the Georgia win would really give a lot. Texas would get a lot more credit for it than they've apparently gotten. It's not like people are dismissing it, but it does seem like a lot of people look at that Georgia game with side eye for some reason, but that's hot garbage. anybody who thinks that Georgia didn't want to be in the Sugar Bowl and didn't want to play that game hard and didn't want to win that game to prove a point is
Jacob,
full of shit.
Georgia wanted to be embarrassed on the national stage. Don't you get it?
Well, they definitely got handled on a national stage.
They got their wish.
Yeah.
They got their wish.
Which
is why Georgia fans are really happy with it.
Yeah, I just find that whole argument just to be absolutely comical, you know. And the LSU game did nothing to diminish what I think the trajectory of this program is right now.
Right. No, I completely agree with that. I'm just saying, hey, Texas needs to take care of the business they need to take care of.
Yes.
To get to being truly back. And that's basically my point. They need to take care of Oklahoma State. They need to take care of West Virginia. They need to win the games that they are favored in to be back. And then one more, like Oklahoma, in one of the two matchups they will hopefully face them in. That's when they need to win that one more. That's when I think they'll truly be back. Then.
I think if they win the Big 12, that's when you see it. You know,
yeah.
If they win the Big 12, that's when you will be able to truly say it, because that will have shown improvement. It may not get you into the playoff this year, but that will show improvement, and then you go into next season on an even higher trajectory.
And Tom Herman will be one third of the way where Mac was, but so let me go ahead and stop us real fast here and get and tell y'all, hey, we are still sponsored. I know I missed it last week, but we are still sponsored by Last Den Hats. Know that you guys in the Barking Carnival Unplugged podcast did not scare them off, not yet. But
thankfully,
right now
yet.
we are the 4th and 5 is brought to you by Last Den Hats. Last Den Hats is honestly one of the coolest Longhorn brands out there. They kind of provide that apparel that is so desperately needed for the Longhorns, because the co-op, they're just lacking, and the hats and the everywhere else are very much lacking. Mike and the guys at Last Stand Hats have done a fantastic job of filling that void. Y'all, I think it's y'all have to go out and get a DBU hat now. I think that's that DBU stuff is probably flying off the shelves right now.
Well, I think that's something that we want to try and get back to now, because neither school could really claim that title after Saturday. But you mentioned their products; they're also actually selling T-shirts
right
now with the DBU moniker on it. Last Stand Hats has a lot of really cool gear to wear. I started becoming aware of what they do back during baseball season. He was coming out to Dish Falk, kind of showing off his new stuff. We started going at it immediately. There's a really cool hat. It's got the state of Texas on the front. It's just a shape of the state of Texas in orange, and right over where Austin would be on the state, it just says fight. That's a really cool hat. The DBU hat is awesome. I'm a big fan of the Legends series that he's kind of launched. Hats with numbers of famous athletes at the University of Texas. Those numbers could be assigned, if you wanted to people from multiple sports, even.
Right.
So you'll see you'll obviously recognize a lot of the numbers you see in that Legend series. So definitely check out laststandhats.com, because it's really some good Longhorn gear. And you're right, it's filling a void, especially in the headwear game, that is massively needed.
It's also very high quality gear, and you will be helping out a Texas fan and I think Texas alum by purchasing this gear. So to get 10% off of any item on that site, use HornsCast10 in the coupon code, and you will get 10% off on any item in the store. Any item. So, y'all, wear your heart on your head and get to the number one place for real Texas fans to get their game day gear, laststandhats.com.
Let's get on to taking a little closer look at the offense in that game and sort of what it means going forward. So on this offensive side, and I wanted to start off with offense because I want to start, you know, in a happier place here. Because Herman and his offense attacked LSU and their defense with aggressive play calls and a ton of misdirection. I mean, their game plan was pretty good. It was very good. I mean, there's certain things you can nitpick, like, hey, get Colin Johnson open with routes that, you know, one route I can think about is one that actually got one of LSU's better wide receivers open when he was double covered, where it's just a run up across the entire field until they lose track of him. You could do that with Colin Johnson, but the thing is you don't need to with the wide receivers that Texas had. I mean, Texas did phenomenal jobs in almost every play calling situation. I mean, you can even take even on those first fourth down stops, the Longhorns had perfect plays lined up. On the first one, LSU was expecting a classic Sam Power to the right. That's why everybody on their team went to the right side of the field, and it left one LSU defender guarding two guys in Ingram and Brewer. Unfortunately, you know, the play failed. But and then on the next fourth down drive, it was just one play. Junior Anguilla missed a block, and it cut off Sam's cutback lane. These little things, it was on the players, but the offensive staff was excellent at contextual play calling almost the entire game. They put LSU on their heels and attacked where the Tigers were not looking. When LSU was taking extra special care to make sure Colin Johnson was double covered, it opened the doors wide open for Duvernay and Eagles, and they punished that single man-to-man coverage on them with, you know, Eagles mossing. Who was it? Fulton and then Devin Duvernay having, was that a career game?
It absolutely was a career game for Devin Duvernay. Because the run game was kind of sputtering and not, and you know, outside of a few carries, really couldn't get untracked. Devin Duvernay, Texas made some adjustments and started with Devin Duvernay primarily, started using the short screen game, you know, bubble screen, side screens, to get Duvernay in with the ball in open space and almost using him like a tailback. And right. In the second half, you could see LSU DBs shying away from contact from Devin Duvernay. He was
not
running.
Not Grant Delpit, but he paid for that.
He was running through guys, and he was punishing them. Duvernay is, as fast as Duvernay is, he is not a guy, and you watch him when he has the ball in his hands, he's not a guy who is trying to make you miss. He'll make one or two moves and then he's just going to lower his shoulder and take you on, and he's winning most of those matchups. The LSU secondary got, it was amazing to see how they reacted to him in the open field when he started coming at them. They didn't want really much any part of him by the time the fourth quarter came around. And it was nice to see the adjustment offensively, at least as far as scheme goes. I also like the fact that Herman went to some more four wide sets and went a little bit, at least to an extent, got away from the 11 personnel that he loves to run so much. Because, you know, Brewer and Leto right now, they're just not bringing a lot to the table. And your best offense right now is going to be with four wide personnel, maybe mixing in some 20 personnel as well. Right now, the 11 personnel grouping just it doesn't maximize your advantages offensively.
Well, where they do well is when they're not on the line. When they are split out wide or when they are in the H-back position, they do pretty well as blockers. But I get what you're saying. They do well when they are not in a true 11 personnel set. But you're right in that they did go to the 10 personnel at times, and it was another point of Tom Herman really doing well with contextual play calling, which is something, again, I'm going to harp on. The lack of the offense in the first half, it can be attributed to play errors, which, you know, as the Longhorns cleared up their heads in the second half, they did incredible with evolving their offense to take advantage of what LSU was giving them. And that came in the terms of, you know, using Rashawn Johnson and Keontae Ingram as more of pass catchers than they are running backs. And that worked very well. Things like finally figuring out how to get Colin Johnson some open throws later in the game. I mean, it took them until the third quarter, but hey, they finally figured it out how to do it. And until then, they're like, well, hey, they're taking that away. We understand where we're strong, and that's across the wide receiver position. And hey, Brennan Eagles and Devin Duvernay are single covered. And along the offensive line, hey, we know where we're strong here, and that's with moving our left guard and our left tackle. You know, honestly, sticking more to the offensive line, I think Texas may have the best offensive line in the conference right now. And until I see Oklahoma improve, because they're kind of young, I think I'm going to stick with that take.
Well, you know, it's hard to compare, at least right now. Oklahoma's level of competition has been just garbage to this point. So it's hard to really tell. Everybody can talk about Houston all they want, but Houston is horrific. But we'll have to see. But they definitely are in the conversation for best offensive line in the conference. This is, I think, definitely the best offensive line that Texas has had in years. When you watch how Sam Cosmi is playing fantastic football, please don't go to the NFL after this year. Please don't go to the NFL after this year. Stay one more
gone,
season.
He's gone, dude. He's
please,
so
please.
Gone.
I'm hoping that Sam Ellinger can maybe like whisper in his ear and whisper sweet nothings and convince him to stay for one more season, since Sam will be here as a senior. But Parker Braun is playing really good football right now. He's had a little bit of struggle in his pass protection, but nothing major. First half on Saturday, he got pushed back a few times by a pretty big dude from LSU.
Rashard Lawrence, yeah.
But yeah, he got pushed back a little bit, but held his own.
He had a few pancakes as well.
He did. Well, if you get him run blocking, now you're right in his wheelhouse.
Right.
But he's still done pretty solid job. Derek Kerstetter may have played his best game as a Longhorn on Saturday.
Oh, man.
Over at right tackle.
Yeah.
He was fantastic. But even Junior Angelau at right guard, I mean, he's a redshirt freshman, and sometimes that might make you nervous, but he has played very solid football so far at that right guard position. We were all a little surprised against La Tech when it was Kerstetter at right tackle and Angelau at right guard. But Herb Hand, he knows, and that's been the combination that's working so far. They played a really solid football game on Saturday. Some of the run issues are not necessarily on the offensive line. A little bit of it is scheme. A little bit of it is Ingram right now, in my we'll get to him where he needs to improve his game. Some of that's on him. But, I mean, again, they held up, I thought, fantastically against that LSU front on Saturday night. And for the most part, they kept Sam Ellinger pretty clean.
Yeah, I think there is one place, though, where in the future this offense needs to touch up on it. And you saw it also last year. Shaq and the offensive guards, whichever side, had some issues up front. And it wasn't one-to-one. I mean, Shaq one-to-one was pretty dominant. But it was picking up stunts. That's how LSU got the vast majority of their pressures. And it was a similar problem to what Texas saw last year between Zach Shackelford and Patrick Vahe. Texas had a lot of trouble picking up stunts, and people started to pick up on that later on in the year and led to a few sacks for Sam Ellinger and a lot of pressure. LSU obviously watched the tape and was like, hey, let's try it out here, and brought a guy like Kalavon Chasen across the nose tackle, across like three guys and into gaps. They brought I want to say Destiny's Child. What's his name? Chastity? I don't even know his name. their linebacker in on a stunt as well and got him a sack. That's how they got their pressures. And it was a consistent problem for Zach Shackelford was understanding, and offensive guards as well, but understanding where that stunt was coming from, communication between them, and then picking that up. And that's something they're going to have to pick up on and really improve upon going into conference play.
Well, and I think that's something you'll see improve as the season goes on. I mean, you Braun is an experienced player, this is his first year in this, not only at obviously at Texas, but in this style of offense since he's been in college. He came from a triple option system at Georgia Tech for the most part. So this is definitely an adjustment for him. Angelau being a redshirt freshman, obviously brand new starter. So you've got an experienced starting center and two brand new guards. I think that what you're talking about is communication, okay, and them working as a unit. I think that you're going to see that improve, at least I hope so, as the season goes forward.
I have no doubt, but I'm just saying, hey, that's something that teams in the Big 12 are going to key on, and they're going to test that out, get that figured out now before it becomes a problem, because it was. It already was a problem.
Yeah, there were a few issues here or there on Saturday night, but they're not going to face a defense the rest of the season that has as much talent on it as LSU's.
Oh, I think that should be an underlying sort of tone and sort of an understanding as we talk about the offense this entire segment is – this LSU defense will be the best Texas sees maybe until Iowa State, and probably better than Iowa State will bring, but Iowa State's going to have a pretty salty defense.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm just saying there is no defense that they will face the rest of the season that has as much talent and is as good defensively as this one is.
Right.
This one was. Oklahoma's isn't, and certainly Iowa State, while they play a good brand of defense, do not bring the athletes that LSU defense
had. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I completely agree with you there. But, you know, speaking of the pressures, a lot of those pressures were on Sam Ehlinger. A lot of the times, you know, some of the sacks numbers were a little inflated because him scrambling and getting tackled for loss counted as a sack. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. A lot of the times it was that he didn't either throw it away or he held on to the ball too long. And I think that I think that came for three sacks. Three of the five were of him just holding on to the ball for too long. And so on that note, let's go ahead and talk about Sam Ehlinger and what we think of him. Because beyond that, Sam Ehlinger, in some of the struggles in the beginning, Sam Ehlinger really took a huge load on his shoulders and did very well. I mean, he had to shake some cobwebs out of his ears in the beginning and sort of get into a rhythm. But after that, he woke up in that 19-play drive to start the third. He was lights out after that, and he had 461 yards of offense, four touchdowns, and no turnovers. And that's in a game of that caliber. You can't ask for something better. You can, but you really, it's hard to get much better out of that.
Obviously, he does have a few holes in his game, just like anybody does. His is occasionally he doesn't put the right touch on deeper throws. Mm-hmm. You saw that a little bit on Saturday. But for the most part, he's playing phenomenal football right now, and he lit it up in the second half. He can hit throws in tight windows. That touchdown pass to Jake Smith an absolute thing of beauty.
And the last touchdown pass as well went, I think, between two guys.
Yeah. The only better throw in the entire football game than that one to Jake Smith, in my opinion, was the touchdown was one of the ones Burrows threw.
Oh, yeah, the one where he put it over Terrace Marshall.
The outside shoulder when Josh Thompson actually had decent coverage. And, you know, he put it over the guy's outside shoulder where only he could get it. I mean, and Marshall made a great catch, too.
Yeah, there's another one to Chance, number one. Their number one wide receiver. Number one. The guy who's wearing the number one, where he absolutely put it. I mean, honestly, I cannot think of a better play. It was just for a first down. It was in an out-of-bounds, like, 15-yard play. But, man, I couldn't imagine a better throw than what he did there. I mean, yeah, Sam Ellinger looked good, but damn, Joe Burrow just was freaking lights out.
I mean, both quarterbacks were fantastic. And, you know, what you saw from Texas in the first half, the reason they only scored 7 points despite moving the ball was they sputtered in the red zone. You know, Ingram's drop was a touchdown that they ended up chasing the entire football game. It worried me when it happened, and it just stuck in my craw the rest of the night. They were chasing it the whole time. But as the game wore on, Sam's accuracy and his demeanor and leadership out there in the field really picked up. And the no turnovers thing is I think, it being overlooked in this game. He had one of the best touchdown to turnover ratios in college football last season. And they had zero turnovers against this LSU defense on Saturday night. And that's the one thing that Sam's game, his game is improving. It almost seems week by week with what he does at the quarterback position. But while it improves, the one thing he still does not do is turn the ball over.
Yeah, 8 touchdowns on the year, no turnovers, not a fumble, not an interception, not even a missed handoff. It's been pretty phenomenal by Sam Ellinger, the control he has on that football. Completely agree with you there. He has been not just a game manager, but a game leader pretty much since Maryland's of last year. Unfortunately, you know, his efforts weren't rewarded, but man, yeah, Sam Ellinger, he really, in a national spotlight, made himself look phenomenal. And if Texas wins that game, he's in the Heisman race. He puts himself into the Heisman race. If, hey, man, you put 4 touchdowns, it would have been 5 if Keontae Ingram would have caught it, 5 touchdowns on LSU, and, you know, one of the DBU, one of the best defenses in the SEC, yeah, you're in the Heisman race there, buddy. So, unfortunately, it's Burrow who's in the Heisman race for absolutely torching Texas, but we'll get to that in a second because, hey, the running backs, we already talked about it. So, yeah, I think we pretty much covered that. I'm kind of going down a list here. Let's go ahead and get onto the defensive side of the ball. And we just got off of talking about quarterbacks. I mean, Sam Ellinger had a phenomenal game. I cannot stress enough how good of a game Sam Ellinger had, aside from, you know, a few off throws here and some deep ball accuracy issues, which in film you can see he brings the ball way down. He brings the ball down to his hip on some throws, and that's when he overthrows it. But beside the point, Sam Ellinger, he should be in the Heisman race. But Joe Burrow absolutely astounded people in that game. I think that's the one thing we need to get straight. Two things. The offense played the best defense they have faced ever. Sam Ellinger faced the best defensive backfield he has ever faced in his entire life. And the other thing we need to get straight is Joe Burrow put passes in perfect spots. In spots that made this defensive backfield look ridiculous and look worse than it really did play. I mean, they didn't play well, don't get me wrong, but he made them look even worse because he looked absolutely phenomenal beyond what the cornerbacks and safeties and linebackers gave him. He was able to read that defense better than what the defense was even thinking about. And honestly, that's a little bit is on Todd Orlando, because when you're supposed to be the confusing, complex defense and a quarterback is able to pick you apart within 2 seconds of the snap, that's on the defense. But even then, he's able to recognize this complex defense and figure out where to put the ball, where these different pressures are coming from, and then place the ball perfectly. That's one thing we need to get straight. 31 catches on 39 attempts for 471 yards. Most of those, I believe, let me get my little notes here. Most of those yards came on 13 passes over 15 yards that accounted for 314 of his total yards. He absolutely killed it. I mean, he knew where to take advantage of these shots. So one thing we need to get straight, Joe Burrow just went off, and he is a legit good quarterback.
He is. And I don't want to take anything away from how Joe Burrow played, because he did play a fantastic game. But I will just say that, unfortunately, Texas made things very not easy. All that difficult for him on Saturday.
Right.
Because of what was going on the defensive side of the ball for them. So, and you know, that's, again, not to take, because he still made some fantastic throws under pressure at times. But he had so many easy throws on Saturday because of guys just running wide open, because Texas just, their defense just didn't really have any cohesion.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Todd Orlando and that defensive staff got out-coached by Joe Brady. Oh,
absolutely.
It's undeniable. I mean, Joe Brady just took advantage of passes over the middle, drew safeties inside to help the linebackers, and then he took advantage of the cornerbacks who are on islands, and then they safeties went out there, and then he took advantage of the middle. It's just kind of a back and forth that Todd Orlando had no idea how to fix. And Todd Orlando, just on top of that, getting out coached, he got out prepared. Coordinators' jobs, they have three main jobs, I believe. You need to set up a game plan and get your guys ready, get the correct player personnel out there, and then call the game to place those players in optimal spots. Those are the three things you need to do: is preparation, get the correct guys out there, and put them in correct spots. They were only able to do one of those things, which is get the correct players on the field. They ran the dime, and that should have been great. I mean, that's like having this chessboard lined up correctly. You know, you're in check. You're in checkmate right there. You're set up for a win, and then you just make all the wrong moves. Because he just did not take into consideration the context of any of the play calls. What do they call it? I believe y'all on y'all show call it play matching, right?
Yeah, call matching.
Call matching.
Yeah.
Call matching.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, Tim Beck did that in his first year in a job, and that's really why he lost the play calling duty. They just did not take into account any of the context of any of the plays. I mean, everybody wants to point out the 3rd and 17 that closed out the game, and it's valid because that is a microcosm of what went wrong in that entire game.
Yes, it was.
Texas had the correct personnel grouping out there. They had Joe Burrow on the ropes. It was the context of the play is you're 3rd and 17. You know, you need to hold them within 10 yards, even 15 yards, and that's a 40-yard field goal. But the play call. Did not make sense in the context of the grand scheme of things. It made sense within a vacuum of, hey, they're probably going to run it here. They would probably run it here. So let's go ahead and throw everybody in there. But that doesn't make sense in the context of what's going on around the game. So going cover zero there, sending the house, you know, sending six guys and a quarterback spy on there just doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense. Why are you putting your cornerbacks who surrendered 314 yards, almost 400 yards, on, was it, 13 attempts on single coverage again?
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense at all.
No, what Todd Orlando right now is struggling with is matching what he wants to do from a defensive philosophy, matching that not only with the players he has on the field, but also matching, you know, getting his pressure scheme and his coverage to match each other. The two things are not working in concert together right now, because, you know, you brought that up about he wanted to get pressure on 3rd and 17 on that play because he wanted to make sure he got the ball out quick. Okay, well, the best way to do that is not to send six guys and have every wide receiver single man covered by guys who are 10 yards off the ball on the snap. Okay? Those things don't those things don't make sense when you put them together. Okay? In that particular instance, what would have made more sense was, okay, send a little bit of pressure, maybe send five guys, but drop back six or seven guys into a zone to where he has to throw it short because pressure is coming and he wants to get something away and guys aren't running free down the field in deep routes and they're keeping everything in front of them. It just, his defensive schemes right now are not working, you know, well together. They're not working as a unit, which is what they're supposed to be. And he needs to figure out, again, this gets back to identity. He needs to figure out what does the identity of this defense need to be with the personnel it has. I understand that Todd Orlando is a pressure guy. That's what he tries to do. I mean, we've seen that since he's been here. He wants to try and bring pressure either with his defensive front, if he has a guy or two that can consistently provide it, or by bringing guys from different spots in different types of blitzing, depending on the personnel he has on the field. You're right about Tim Beck, the comparison. You have to adjust what it is you want to do to the personnel you have to do it with. Your job as a coordinator is to maximize your unit's strengths while masking its weaknesses. And right now, Todd Orlando is not doing a good job of that.
And Todd Orlando himself said this last night in his press conference. He said that it's on me, this is a quote, it's on me to get these guys in some better positions. He said, I had an emotional conversation with the corners on Sunday. He says, I'm going to help you. That's a quote from Todd Orlando on himself. So it's not that we're just saying this is what we think is happening. This is actually what Todd Orlando is saying has happened.
We shall see.
Right.
We shall see.
Exactly. So Texas, the bottom line is Texas gave no help to their weak spots in that game. There was no context in the grand scheme of things. He just said, hey, here, I want to do single coverage with my cornerbacks. I want to put Kobe Boyce on Terrace Marshall.
Right now, your cornerbacks are not good man-to-man coverage guys, exactly. Except for maybe Jalen Green.
I want to have my linebackers be aggressive. And what happens there is they get them up, and they have no idea what they're doing, and it's wide open across right behind them. Again, Texas had the correct personnel on the field with their dime personnel most of the game. They had more safeties to hopefully cover up the lack of the linebackers and the cornerbacks' play in the pass game. They were able to stuff the run with less numbers in the box. They would be able to disguise more covers with movement to throw off Burrow. However, instead, they chose to send these guys from the second and third level and play man-to-man. They decided to, you know, play zone 10 yards off the ball. They left the cornerback on islands. It's just, hey, including on two crucial third downs beyond that third and 17. And here's the thing, and here's kind of why this is happening, is the trade-off between a simple and complex defense. Here's the general thought in football is, what you add in complexity to either the offensive or defensive side oftentimes sacrifices understanding for your players. When you have a complex defense, you have to teach the players the plays, and less so how to play the position. So the more plays you have and looks that you have, the more time you have to spend on teaching those and less time teaching the position. With this complexity, it works well with the aggression, which is why Orlando loves the two, the mixture of the two. You know, what's the use of catching the other side off guard if you don't hit them in the mouth with it? That is why Todd Orlando and David Aranda's defenses are so blitz heavy. But what's happening here is when these offenses are figured out, the players don't know how to play the position beyond that. You saw that with the linebackers. They were consistently out of position, which led to a lot of those, you know, over the middle passes that Joe Burrow took advantage of and just dinked and dunked down the field until he could get the safeties in the middle and abuse the cornerbacks. And then on top of that, when you can't get any pressure up front, then the blitzes don't work and the complexity is very quickly figured out and the players don't know what's going on. Again, you need to make it simpler for these players, give more time to base plays and their position in the defense.
The complexity part of this comes back to what I was saying when it is like what the job is of a coordinator, whether it's offense or defense. You have to understand, I understand that, you know, every coach has an identity of what they would like things to be in an ideal world. But you have to understand and know what it is that your group does best.
Right.
Okay? What is it that these guys as a unit are best at? Once you figure that out, the complexity part and trying to add wrinkles, those things should be added in order to maximize those things that they do well. So that they don't have to think about it as much. It's just something that they can do because you're trying to enhance that skill set and enhance what it is that they do best to, you know, disrupt the offense. And that's where you mix in wrinkles. When you mix in complexities and wrinkles on your defense or your offense, for, you know, if you're going, you know, talking about that side of the ball, if you're mixing in those things just because this is a wrinkle you want to add, but it's something that it's something that your unit doesn't do well, then it becomes a counterproductive thing.
Right.
And right now, that's, you know, we saw it a couple of years ago with Tim Beck when, you know, some of those things weren't necessarily his fault. It was a lack of personnel, but, you know, and a lot of injuries. But you have to look at and evaluate what it is your guys do best and try and maximize it. And Todd Orlando needs to figure that out. The problem is, whereas Tim Beck had Tom Herman to help him figure that out and straighten things out on that side of the ball, Todd Orlando, in many ways, is kind of on his own. Yes, Tom Herman can get involved, but he's not a defensive guy.
Right.
You know, Todd Orlando has been kind of left to his own devices to run this defense because he had success when he first got here. But right now, especially against spread teams, his defense is struggling because he is not doing a good job of matching his personnel to how he schemes and how he game plans.
Right, and I think also a lot of this is the youth of this defense, and I know.
Oh, that's absolutely a part of it. The youth and inexperience is a major factor.
And
here.
People hate hearing that. They're like, oh God, they're blaming the youth. Yeah, especially on the basketball team, we're always like on the pretend we're football podcast. We're always like, oh, the youth of this basketball team is just holding us back. Well, honestly, here the youth of this football team was apparent. It was very apparent with their lack of understanding of the defense in certain points, and that's going to happen. But what's going to happen is I feel this defense will get better over time, over the season, as they understand their position, as they understand what's going on the field and in this offense. This complexity will be simplified for them, and hopefully Todd Orlando will help them out by simplifying it. The defense down even more to help them get to where they need to be quicker. Sort of lower the ceiling of complexity as they start to climb the stairs up to it.
I think the defense has, you know, not performed as well as people hoped they would early in the season, but I do think that it's time to maybe do some simplification because they're struggling more than everybody thought they would. So it's time to get back to basics. Let's get back to some fundamentals, figure out what it is that they do best as a unit, and get an identity as a defense, because right now they just don't have it.
And put them in the correct places to make the plays.
Yes.
But I think that's where we're going to end it off, y'all. This has been your 4th and 5 podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER or text us at thefootballbrainiacs.com. And Mr. Jacob Denimore, thank you for hanging out with me today. Where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Kips Big Boy, KIPSBIGBOY. You will see my opinions there. And I've got the same handle on all the Longhorn message boards, too.
And you guys can find us and our other shows on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on any podcasting platform out there like Podbean, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, anywhere you can find us, you'll find the Hornscast.
Yep, the new episode of Barking Carnival Unplugged dropped on Wednesday morning, so out there, ready to be listened to.
And on that note, thank y'all for listening, and we'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.